Hi, ladies, and welcome to the Story Night podcast. I'm Jessica Campbell, and stories are my passion. It's my honor to host this podcast where real women share real stories of real hope. Each episode features one woman sharing her personal story with you. Too often, we fall into the traps of comparison and judgment, but what if we took the time to hear each other's real stories? Let's remember that we all have a story, and our stories matter. We're so glad you've joined us on this podcast journey. May you find hope and encouragement in this episode's story. Hi, ladies, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Story Night podcast. If this is your first time finding us, welcome. We are so glad you're here. And if you've been following us for a while, we're so glad you're still with us. We get to hear these amazing stories from women all over our community. And the stories are so diverse, as you know, if you've been following, that we've got women of all different ages, all different backgrounds, stories that are lighthearted, stories that are really heavy, and just everything in between. They are all shared with the purpose to encourage you and just remind you that you have a story and you're not alone. My guest for this episode is a friend that I have been asking for her to share her story for a little while, and so many friends have recommended her as well. And it's such a unique and beautiful story. I'm excited for you all to hear it. So Anna, thank you for being willing to do this and sharing your story, what you went through and how you ended up helping others. When we go through some sort of a suffering, it often leads us into a compassion for others, and our pain becomes our purpose and so forth. Women who have listened to this for a while have heard me say that many times. But first, let's just have you introduce yourself to everybody, who you are, your family, what you do in your life today.
Of course. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for having me on. I'm happy to share my story. My name's Anna. And I grew up in Portland, Oregon, but a little known fact about me is I was born in Upper Hayford, England. My dad was stationed in the Air Force, but I grew up stateside for the most part. I'm a mom. I have three kids. I'm a wife. My husband and I have been married nearly 20 years, very happily married. And I also work as a sales executive for Tycor Title.
Yeah. And for anybody who doesn't know what Tycor Title is.
So it's a title and escrow company, essentially the dumbed down, easy to understand version of that's where you go to sign your papers when you're buying or selling a house.
Yes. All fun things. And you do so many amazing things in the community, as well as those who have been following the podcast for a while have learned. So many of the women on this podcast have been connected with the McMinnville Chamber of Commerce through a wonderful Friday morning gathering called Greeters. And there's just so many incredible women there, so many incredible stories, and you are one of them.
Yes, I sit on the board of directors for the Chamber of Commerce. I'm a part of the event planning committee with that puts on our Glide and Gather skating event, which is coming up. And if you're listening to this and at the end of 2025, then that's coming up. Other than that, I also am on the government affairs committee, and yes, very involved in the community. I love being here.
Yeah. So I imagine many women who are local listeners will immediately recognize you and know, wait, I know her from some way. So let's start with your story. And we always like to start at the very beginning, you know, just you told us where you were born, mm-hmm. but then, so how did you end up getting, you know, from England back over to stateside, and tell us a little bit about your childhood and we'll go from there.
Yeah. So like I said, my dad was in the Air Force, so I was born in England. But then when he retired out of the Air Force when I was three, moved back home to where my parents grew up and met. Fun fact, they met at Parkrose High School. So they were just kids when they met, and they got married in their early 20s. So home was Portland. So they moved back there, and that's where I grew up. And then I moved out to McMinnville about 9 years ago. And this is definitely home. I love being here. So that's just kind of me in a nutshell. I am a very driven person. I like to excel in everything I do. And that kind of stems all the way back from my childhood. Going to school, it was very important for me to get straight A's and to do a good job in all that I did. I ended up having one B in high school, having one B in college, but ultimately I'm now okay with just being, you know, salutatorian in high school and summa cum laude in college. But there was it's been a journey for me to overcome the feeling that I have to be perfect.
Yes. We could have a whole separate episode, just you and me, on that conversation. This is what's so fun for me, too, is I get to record these stories with women in our community. The overlap, how much you find in common. And the more and more you've told your story, I'm like, oh, I have a connection there. I have a connection there. And oh, there's a theater background. Yes. And you talk about, you know, getting the 1B in high school. Like, I still remember that, the 1B.
Right.
But anyway, many women listening, I think, can relate to that drive for success, drive for perfection, and have struggled with that to some degree. You know, how do you stay driven and motivated and do well without letting it overtake you or consume you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I could do a whole nother episode on anxiety and perfectionism, but we'll do a different episode
yeah,
today.
Yeah, we might have to come back for like a sequel. Oh my goodness. Okay. And now in college, you went to a college that's changed its name?
Yes. So I attended Northwest Christian College, and that's what it was called at the time. It's next to the U of O campus in Eugene, Oregon, but it is now, the name has changed. It's Bushnell University, but it's the same school. Yeah. So I attended college there right after high school, and that's where I met my husband, Brent. And Brent and I met, he was a transfer student he came from Montana, and I was just a young 18-year-old. We met, and we quickly became really, really good friends, and he asked me to date him, and I had decided he was too old. Me at 18 and him at 22. So it took him a couple more months to win me over, and eventually we got together.
Amazing. And when did you get married?
So we got married during my fourth year of college. He had just graduated and I had about a semester left. So those were some really interesting lean years. I was 20 years old when we got married, definitely living on a very small income, but we were happy and yeah. We were together.
I love hearing the stories, the success stories, right? Because there's the cultural opinion that says, oh, that's too young. You know, too young to get married, you're not going to make it. Obviously, you did. You've been happily together, and not that life hasn't thrown challenges, but you said almost 20 years, which is amazing. Before we move on, though, just do you have a quick sentence or two of encouragement or even advice to those who are looking to get married young?
The thing that has stuck out in my mind is my mom told me over and over again when I was young, make sure you marry your best friend, because she is married to her best friend, and my parents have been married for 40 plus years now. And so that's why it's important to me to share how Brent and I became such good friends in college, because really it stemmed from this friendship. And because of that friendship, we have had longevity and a lot of success and a mutual respect for each other and enjoying the same things together. We just have a lot of fun. We just got back from Disneyland. Just the two of us went to Disneyland last week, and we just enjoy hanging out together.
Yeah. You can see that. I mean, I think other people in the community would say the same when they see you out in public. You can tell that you like each other, you know, that it's not you are in love, but you also like each other.
Yes.
And sometimes those are different things, right?
Yes, sometimes they're different things.
Oh, okay. And so then, so you married before you actually graduated. And so let's finish off your college, you know, your degree, and then we get to start talking about building a family.
Yes. So I have a Bachelor's of Arts in Communications. I had this desire to do radio broadcasting, and I had even done an internship at a radio station that I really enjoyed. But when college came to an end, we were hitting a recession, and there was not a lot of jobs available. So my husband and I ended up just kind of finding work where we could. And my job ended up bringing me to Farmers Insurance as a claims adjuster and back home living with my parents for a short while in Portland.
And then eventually that takes you into Tycor title and insurance and all of these things. But we're going to kind of pause the career story, because there's this amazing story of building not only your family, but helping others. This is going to be fun. Everyone buckle up for this, because we're going to get into a chapter that not a lot of people are familiar with. And I love getting to shed light on the experiences that are less familiar, because I think that's just so good for the community as a whole, right? But let's start with you starting your family.
So my husband and I, when we were engaged, we had a lot of conversations about children and how many children we wanted. And I come from being the oldest of three. My husband is the oldest of two, and he wanted a larger family. And so we decided three or four kids would be kind of where we would land at. So we'd been married a couple of years, and we decided that we wanted to start our family. And unfortunately for us, just things did not happen right away. And we had our other friends were having babies, getting pregnant right away, and it was a bit of a struggle for us. And we had a hard time month after month finding out that we weren't pregnant. But the good news is, after about 6 months, I had this beautiful dream that I fully believe is from the Lord. And in this dream, I gave birth to a baby boy and named him Liam. And I have no idea, like, that name had never come to my head before. Like, of course, I'd heard the name Liam before, but it was just something that came out of the blue. And about 2 days after that dream, I found out that we were pregnant with our child, who later we found out was a boy. And immediately I knew, of course it's a boy, and of course his name has to be Liam.
Wow.
Yes.
I think a lot of women would wish for that. Like, oh, could I just have a dream that tells me everything's going to be okay, that mm-hmm. my wish is coming, or, you know, the longing of my heart is on its way. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in your case, it was just 2 days later
right.
that you got the news. That's amazing.
Yes.
And so now you have your first miracle child.
Yes. Yes. And at the time, I was working at Farmers Insurance as a claims adjuster in the personal injury protection department. And shortly after we found out we were pregnant, we had also just bought a house, our first house. And then I found out I was being laid off from my job. And I had been the breadwinner. And so it really was a scary time. We just bought this house that we need to pay for. We have a baby on the way. And I had a few months that I knew I'd be at the job, but then I'd be laid off shortly after my son was born.
And were you in your early 20s at this point?
I was 24 when my son was born.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of change all at once, you know, still at a relatively young age, all the things you have to navigate. And again, great that you're married to your best friend, because then you can work through this together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And Brent will tell you it was kind of a kick in the pants for him to find a career, because he had been working, but he's like, I need to find a career now so I can support my family. When we were dating and engaged, we had shared the desire for our family, and the desire would be that I would be a stay-at-home mom. So we also had the perspective that this layoff was, in a way,
yeah,
God forcing our hand, yeah, that I would get to be a stay-at-home mom. And I think if that didn't happen, I would have continued to work. And there's nothing wrong with being a working mother. I am a working mother right now. But for our family, that's what we needed. So things were really, really lean, but I got to be a stay-at-home mom for 10 years.
Wow.
Yes.
And as you shared in the beginning of the episode, there are more children coming after,
yes,
Liam,
yes,
right? And so how long was it between Liam and your next child?
Yes. So we wanted our next child to be about a couple of years apart from our first. And again, we ran into another struggle of just, I wasn't getting pregnant. We even tried some medication to help spur that on for me to be pregnant. It took several months, and finally I had a positive test, and we were thrilled and excited. Shortly after having the positive test, I went to the doctor. I had my son, who at the time was two, Liam, was with me when I went to the doctor. Unfortunately, my husband had to be at work, and we thought there would be no issues. It'd just be a pregnancy confirmation with my midwife. But unfortunately, she found that I was no longer pregnant, and I started bleeding. And it was very hard to then go out to the car with my toddler, and I'm just sobbing and broken down, because we had so thought that this was going to be our next child, and that God had answered our prayers.
And yeah, then you have to struggle with all of those emotions, all of the grief,
absolutely,
while still being a fully present mom to a toddler.
Yes. And a part of me thinks, you know, well, at least it was early, in the pregnancy. But as any family, any mother knows, as soon as you find out you're pregnant, you have envisioned that child and that life, and you're thrilled and you're excited. So even though it was still early on, it still was a very painful part of my story.
Kind of glad you mentioned that, because I do think there's a lot of women with great intentions who will say something like that, wanting to maybe make you feel better. Mm. And they'll say, oh, well, at least it was early. Mm. And that can be one of the most painful sentences to hear, even though they're not intending, you know, mm-hmm. to hurt you. But before moving on, was there anything that somebody did say or do that actually was comforting?
You know, I don't know that there was anything that someone specifically said to me. I honestly can think of more of the hurtful things. At least you have one, you know, those types of things. But I gave myself permission to be mad at God. Not that I stopped believing in God, but I gave myself permission to say, God, I am really, really mad. I felt like you were fulfilling this dream to me and my family, and it didn't happen. And I love you, God, and I believe in you, and I'm faithful, but I know you're a big God and you can handle my anger, and I'm just going to be mad at you for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was. And it was in the sense of a healthy anger, just, you know, sometimes with a friend or something, you can be angry, but right. you still love them and you overcome and you work through it.
Yeah.
And God just embraced me and held me in that time, and I came through it. And one of the beautiful messages God gave me, similar to the dream I had for our first child, was, I can't even explain exactly how it was communicated, but I just, every time, it sounds ridiculous, but every time I'd look at a clock, it seemed to always land on 5:23, whether it was early in the morning, I'm laying in bed, or in the evening. And I just had this sense that this was a message from God and that it meant something. Right. And 5:23 happens to be my birthday. Oh. So part of me was like, well, that's just silly. I just see it because it's my birthday. But over and over again, I would just get this feeling, this sense of, you are going to have a child on 5:23. And I'd see it on everywhere. I'd see 5:23. And lo and behold, we got pregnant again. And he arrived late on 5:23 on my birthday.
Wow. You can't make this stuff up.
No, it was not planned at all. He was supposed to be born earlier. It just happened in such a way. Henry was born on 5:23.
Amazing.
Yes, absolutely. And I know it sounds so silly for that to be just kind of this little message from God, but it absolutely was.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. So you've got these two miracle boys that both sort of came with a message, or with some assurance that they were coming.
Yes.
And I do like that you mentioned that you gave yourself that permission to be angry. And I think anybody listening, like regardless of their worldview and so forth, you can all relate with that need to allow yourself to feel your emotions.
Absolutely.
And let yourself work through that rather than trying to force yourself into a different emotion when you're not there. And of course, there's a balance of, you know, you don't want to stay in a dark place for a very, very, very long time to where it's ruining your life or somebody else's life, but to allow yourself that time to grieve, time to be sad, time to be angry, time to feel what you need to feel before you can kind of heal and move forward.
Absolutely.
And now at this point, you might think, okay, we've got these two miracle children. Life's a wonderful. But at the beginning, when you were talking about your dreams, you had originally wanted, you know, 3 or 4 kids. So after Henry was born, were you immediately thinking about a third, or just kind of catching your breath?
So our boys ended up being 3 years apart, and we wanted to have a third, and we had basically been planning, well, let's do 3 years apart again between these two, because I am 3 years apart from my siblings, and it just seems familiar, and I like things even.
the perfectionist.
The perfection part.
Nice even numbers. You do work with numbers too.
Right,
so.
Right. And so we decided to not go on birth control, that we just used kind of the rhythm method, and we'll see what happens. And ultimately, just after Henry's second birthday, we had a surprise pregnancy. Surprise in the sense of that wasn't the timing we had planned. We had anticipated it to be a struggle again, but she was just a beautiful blessing. I remember my husband coming home from work and I showed him the pregnancy test. And he goes, "Are you serious?" And then a huge hug and super excited. And some nervousness too, absolutely, ever since the miscarriage with Henry and then with our third, nervousness of, is this going to stick? Sure. Is this going to be a healthy baby?
Yeah. And again, something that is so relatable for all women listening. So many have been through that, whether they had a hard time getting pregnant or they've lost a baby or several babies, and just that fear that, mm-hmm. that comes over you. I mean, 9 months is a long time, and you just think any day something could go wrong. And that's such a hard thing when you're trying to be joyful and excited, but then there's this sort of shadow of, are you going to be struck with grief again?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But this little lovely lady came.
Yes. My third is Ellie. And Ellie is a spunky little firecracker. I love her very much.
She might be a little bit like her mama, huh?
She is.
So now you have your three miracle babies on
yes.
earth, one in heaven. Your family's complete. Mm-hmm. And then you move to McMinnville.
Yes.
Right? And then we get to talk about how you help other families.
Yes. So we've had our three kids and we're living in Alloa at the time, just outside of the Portland area. My husband's job moves him out to McMinnville. And so we make the move to McMinnville, like I said, about 9 years ago, just a little over. And we've been very happy here. We've built a beautiful community here and a couple of very close friends that are family to us now that we met when we moved here have a beautiful journey and story to share. And one of which is that the wife has been a surrogate in the past. And that was interesting to me to meet someone who carried a baby for another family. And I enjoyed hearing her story, but that was about it. I had never really thought like, oh, maybe I should do that as well or anything like that. But it was actually my husband who approached me and he said, "I know you have this beautiful heart for women and for families because of the journey that we went through as a family. What do you think, Anna, of being a surrogate and carrying a baby to create another family for a family that can't?" And initially, I was like, there's no way. I don't think I could do that. For one, it was a struggle for us to get pregnant with the boys. And I just don't think that that's going to happen. Let me pray about it. I ultimately went back to my husband and said, you know, it is very, very difficult to go through the application process to be a surrogate. In this case, with Northwest Surrogacy Center. Let's just journey forward and see where God opens doors. And
see if you even qualify.
Absolutely.
Right?
See,
because
if
so few women qualify to be a surrogate, to be a carrier. And so, yeah, just, you know, kind of expecting probably a door to close somewhere along the line, right?
Absolutely. Because I thought, you know, I will step out in faith, but also I fully expected doors to close. And I think it's so beautiful that my husband recognized that purpose in my life. And it totally was a God thing for God to kind of lead him to have that conversation with me.
Yes. And as listeners may have guessed at this point, all the doors opened for you.
Absolutely. It's a very difficult process. It starts, of course, with a paper application and answering questions, but then going on to a lot of physical evaluations. I have seen more parts of my body than most people have up on a computer monitor, but it's also psychological evaluations for me and my husband, making sure that we have the capacity in our marriage and our relationship to do this. It is very all-encompassing and not an easy process whatsoever. But ultimately, God kept opening doors and I got matched. It's really like a matching service where you get to see people's profiles, and got matched with a single lady. Her name's Mary Ellen in Seattle. And she has a beautiful story of just wanting to have children, never kind of finding Mr. Right. She was a single woman, wanted to have kids. She wasn't able to carry herself. She was in her 40s. And she had tried the adoption route, which is very, very difficult as a single person. And ultimately learned about surrogacy and decided to go that route and to find a surrogate to carry a baby for her.
Right. And that was you.
That was me. That yeah. was me.
And again, this is one of those topics that there could be a 3-hour conversation on how that all works, the things you have to consider. As you talked about, you know, there's the physical part, there's the psychological part, there's a legal part. There's so many layers to a journey like this.
Right? Yes.
Now, you get matched and she has embryos, right, at this point?
Yes.
And then they get to transfer an embryo to you, and you get to be the oven, basically.
Yes, basically. So she had 3 embryos, and the eggs, in this case, are from a donor, and the sperm is from a donor. So these embryos are not physically, genetically related to the mom, and of course not genetically related to me either.
I know that's one thing a lot of people think, that the surrogate is biologically related to the baby she carries. And there are some cases where it's the traditional surrogate where there is, that is the woman's egg who's carrying. But more often than not, for those who meet surrogates or hear about that in today's world, it's usually they are gestational carriers, right? It's just, you're not carrying a child that's at all biologically related to you.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Not at all. So it's a very difficult process to become pregnant with an embryo that's being transferred. You know, usually a woman's body goes through, you know, all these miracle processes that make a comforting, you know, warm, perfect environment for a baby to grow. And so you have to artificially create that with lots of injections, medications. I can't even tell you how many injections I've had. And I personally hate needles, so my husband would have to give them to me every night. I would look away.
That's a huge undertaking if you don't like needles.
Absolutely hate them. And when I went through the journey to become pregnant with this baby, I had so many syringes and needles, it filled a large glass bowl by the end of it, just as a way to kind of show, like, wow, that is a lot.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. But it was successful.
Yes, had a successful transfer, and it's basically a process. You go into like a medical room, and you have a doctor and nurses, and they bring an embryo in. And in this case, the embryo was 5 days hatched. That essentially means the process to start becoming a baby has begun. And then that was transferred to me through like a syringe, essentially. Yes.
And I know, again, there's so many people listening that maybe they've never walked through this journey either themselves or with a friend, or, you know, you hear about this more and more. You hear it more in like even TV shows and movies and celebrities, you know, so I think it's becoming a little more familiar. But yeah, it's a whole process where a lot of people are very like, wow, how does that work? How did you do that? And the other thing that I think, at least I've noticed with a lot of people, is the assumption that, oh, this is a really intense, expensive process, but if you do it, you're like guaranteed it's going to work.
No, you are not. Thankfully, for this journey, everything was very successful, and I was able to get pregnant right away in the sense of...
Like the first try?
The first try.
Yeah.
And just so you know, with any surrogacy journey, the time from being matched with someone to giving birth to a baby, the minimum is 18 months, because there is such a long process leading up to make sure everything is perfect.
Right.
For this embryo to be transferred and for a healthy baby to be born.
Yes.
Being a surrogate, I was a part of a surrogacy community with Northwest Surrogacy Center. There were many surrogates that were not able to successfully be pregnant. There's still so many unknowns and so many variables, as much as science is able to overcome some of those. But I successfully gave birth to Lainey, and she was bigger than all of my babies at 9 pounds. Mine were all 8 and under, but she was born very healthy, and I was very pleased to give her to Mary Ellen. And I was very purposeful when Lainey was born. If you've ever given birth to a baby, they put the baby up on top of, well, I'm not the mama, but on top of the woman and clean them all up. And I was very careful to not hold the baby because I wanted mama to be the first. As soon as they cleaned baby all up, they put Lainey in her mom's arms, and she got to hold the baby and go through all the processes of weighing and those things, those
skin
beautiful
to skin
things
time
they do.
And all of those things that she got to do. So she got to be in the room with you.
She was in the room with me. I had my husband and I had Mary Ellen with me. And yes, it was beautiful. And some people ask, you know, is it hard to, their words is give up a baby. And I'm not giving up a baby. This isn't my
baby from the beginning. Yeah,
exactly. This wasn't my baby from the beginning. You know, I loved being there and being present and caring for this growing child. But I always knew it wasn't mine. It's kind of thinking more of like a niece or a nephew. Like I love them, but they're not my child.
Right.
And so when Lainey was born, I was able to be very, very excited, but also recognize that this wasn't my child.
Well, then I imagine even for any woman who has done this, if that was at all a bit of a struggle, just seeing the face of the mom or the dad, the parents, holding this child they've longed for forever. I mean, presumably somebody who goes through surrogacy like has wanted this for a long time,
right?
And that things weren't easy. Usually that's how you end up going through a surrogacy journey, right? And just to see probably the look on her face.
Yes. Oh, it was amazing. Yeah. I was just so thrilled for her in this moment, for her to carry her child, to hold her child.
Yeah.
And I wanted to share that through this journey and connection with being matched with Mary Ellen, it's beautiful to create a friendship with her, and her daughter is still in my life. In fact, Mary Ellen asked my husband and I to be godparents. So my kids view Lainey as their cousin, essentially,
cousin,
and I view her as a niece. And we still meet once or twice a year. It's beautiful.
That's amazing. Now, how old is Lainey now?
She just turned 7.
And does she know her story? Does she know that you carried her?
Yes, she does. And in 7-year-old fashion, she likes to tell people, you know, like teachers and things, you know, my mom paid for me. Essentially.
Like, yes. Well,
and another lady gave birth to me. You know, those kinds of things that kids are funny about. But yes, she understands I am Aunt Anna.
Yeah.
And I carried her. But Mary Ellen is her mom.
And the story didn't end there.
No.
Because there's another journey.
There is another.
You did this again.
I did it again, but only for Mary Ellen. She approached me and said she may want to have another child.
Right. Because there were still 2 more embryos, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
There's still 2 more embryos. She said she might want to have another child. And if she does, she would only want to use me as a surrogate because we just had such a positive experience and had built this relationship. I told her that I would be willing. And ultimately in 2020, which is an interesting time, I could share all other stories, kinds of stories about being a surrogate during COVID is very different from the first experience. But she approached me and asked me to carry again.
And you did.
And I said yes.
It was successful,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Oh, and so then it was another little girl?
Yes. Her name's Sarah. She was even bigger than her sister.
You just kept growing these babies. Wow.
Yes.
Was it easier the second time?
No.
I mean, COVID, yeah.
Right. No, in the sense of, so I had my 3 kids in my 20s, and so I'm having these 2 in my 30s. I was 37 when I was pregnant with Sarah, which is considered a geriatric pregnancy, which is very rude.
It's very rude.
But I can tell you, just being pregnant later, it's just so much harder on your body. And already, I know people tell me all the time, oh, you must have really easy pregnancies to give birth to five babies. And it was not. I still had heartburn, nausea, all those things. Pregnancy is still a challenge, but I had very healthy pregnancies. The babies were very healthy and they were born very healthy.
Amazing. And what a blessing that you gave that lady, that mama. Mm-hmm. And someday maybe she'll have to tell her story on here.
Yes.
To get the full picture, because this is one of those moments where you see an incredible story overlapping with another incredible story and how your story changed hers.
Yes.
And blessed her forever. I mean, absolutely a life-changing gift beyond really much else that you could ever imagine.
Absolutely.
You know, it's hard to think of anything better than giving somebody who wants to be a parent the ability to be the parent.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, bless you for what you did. And as we are wrapping up here, I always like to kind of close out our episodes with any words of encouragement or, you know, life lessons, things that you've gathered along your journey that you might want to share with the listeners, you know, your story takeaways.
Looking back and seeing how there was that heartache, we talked about me having that anger. And in the end, I was blessed with three beautiful children. And then to be able to bless another family and to grow another family and to take heartache and to turn that into two families is just such a miracle. And I give all the glory to God that He brought me through that journey to the place where I became a surrogate and grew another family. I would have never done it, I think, if I hadn't had the struggles I did to grow my own family, because it gave me the perspective and the heart and the compassion for another mama who just wants to be a mama.
Yeah.
To give her those beautiful children.
Amazing. Well, ladies listening, I hope you were very encouraged by Anna's story. And who knows, maybe there's some of you out there that are struggling to become a mom yourself, or maybe you're one of those people that think, wait, I might be able to help a family in this way. I'm just going to take a guess here. I didn't actually ask Anna this ahead of time, but I'm going to guess, ladies, that if you wanted to talk more, that Anna would be willing to talk with you.
Of course. I am very happy to answer any questions. When I was pregnant, people would approach me all the time and ask me about, you know, a baby, and I would tell them about this journey that I went on. Now that I'm not pregnant, you don't have an outward sign that I've been a surrogate, but you are absolutely welcome to come ask me. I'm very happy to share my journey.
Yeah, which is incredible. And so, ladies, you can always email me. I can get you connected with Anna and know that she's an amazing resource for you. And for those of you who are new to Story Night, I want to share that in addition to this podcast, we host 4 live events each year. And those are just beautiful. It's like a girls' night out, and they're free. You can get a ticket on our website, storynighthope.com. I would recommend doing that as soon as possible, because we expect easily 250 women and there are only a handful of tickets left. So jump on, grab your ticket. We'll have food, we'll have drinks, we'll have prizes, a chance to just meet women in the community, build relationships, make new friends. And then of course, we get to hear one woman tell her life story on stage with a slideshow. And it's just a really amazing evening. We would love to have you there. Our next one is January 29th, and our speaker is Veronica, and she's going to share a story of, as she says, growing up Latina in a not-so-Latina place and going through a health journey and so many other chapters of her life that you don't want to miss out on that one. Now, if you happen to be listening to this episode after January 29th, 2026, still go on our website because you can see whatever event we've got coming up next and get tickets for that one. Thank you also to State Representative Lucetta Elmer. She's the one providing the platform for this season of Story Night. She's a former Story Night speaker and really believes strongly in the power of us sharing our stories. So we're very grateful for her providing this time for this season. And ladies, thank you so much for tuning in. We hope that you were blessed. We hope you were encouraged and just inspired by Anna's story, and that you come back and join us next time for our next story. Until then, remember, you have a story. Your story matters, and you are not alone.